the aim of the show has always been to become an online library of India's best success stories and eventually the world's best success stories. Arman Malik is a brother. He's a dear friend. He's also someone who's paving the way for India's entire pop music scene. He made it big in Bollywood. He's made it big in the international space as well now. He's the only Indian singer in the history of Indian singers who's made it to the Billboard charts and who's made an impact on the international stage. This is Arman's real life story. And I don't want to call it a struggle story because I strongly feel that your struggles are very important in turning you into the person you need to be in order to get to where your soul wants to be in life. I hope you gain inspiration and insight from this episode of The Ranveer Show because Arman really spoke from his heart. He's spoken about things that you may never have known about him. Even if you're not someone who's interested in the music industry or from the music industry, I highly recommend you watch this podcast just to understand what sheer human will and dedication can do for someone's life and someone's career. This is the bomb of inspiration brought to you by Ranveer and Arman Malik on The Ranveer Show. But before I begin the podcast, just want to remind you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Beer Biceps, where we host the video version of this podcast, and subscribe to The Ranveer Show Clips, our third channel that just contains the highlights from every single episode. If you want a quick dose of knowledge, go check out The Ranveer Show Clips on YouTube. Enjoy yourselves, guys. Mr. A to the M, Arman Malik, in the house.
What's up? In my house.
In your house. Dude, I want to talk about your story. Also talk about aspects of you that I think I'm fortunate enough to know, but I think that the world doesn't know.
I'm ready, man. You just bring it on. I'm ready to talk about a lot of stuff.
So while we are going to begin with your Sare Gama story, I want to know, I have a lot of questions from that part of your life. We're also going to go into who you are today. Are you planning to go abroad and live there and create English music? What are you thinking about life in general? Because I personally feel you're a really woke dude. And woke dudes usually think in like 20 places. It's a good thing.
Correct.
What's your earliest memory of getting into this whole singing zone, dude? Like, did it come naturally to you?
So, I was like around 4 when I... Like, instead of talking properly, I was singing. I don't know how that happened. Mm. But my parents saw that. And they were like, you know, I think this guy has some singing talent in him. We should put him for classes. And then they enrolled me in Indian classical classes. And for a year, I was training at Suresh Wadkar's Institute. But it was a fabulous class, but way beyond my age.
Mm.
So I kind of went back there after a few years to learn stuff when I knew that I could grasp that. But then I went to a teacher called Rita Kaul, and she is a Kashmiri lady, and she is the guru that has made me who I am.
Your sensei.
Yeah, she's the one who put all those grains in my voice, got me to sing the way I do today, got me to be a singer that could sing playback for movies, because being a classically trained singer sometimes can be disadvantageous when you're trying to sing film songs, because the kind of training that you have as a classical vocalist might not translate.
It restricts you somewhere?
Not restricts you. When you're singing a filmy song, when you're singing for heroes, and you need a different kind of an approach. You need a different kind of dynamic. And I think heavy classical training, I did light classical, I did semi-classical, but I didn't do heavy classical because I didn't want my voice to sound so hard. I needed that little bit of softness for the screen for playback singing. And that's how my teacher, also my guru, planned to kind of teach me in that way. So I would grow up to be a playback singer. At 8, at 15, at 20, at 25, I've had different Arman Malik versions of my voice.
What's your like Sare Gama memory? Like when you're like coming on TV as a kid, like how old are you? 10?
I was 9 and I turned 10 on the show.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's that memory like, dude? You're just like out there for the nation to see, putting your talent out.
So I think my dad wasn't very keen on me participating in on a reality show.
Mm.
He was wanting me to do my education and my studies and stuff like that. He being from the film industry, he didn't want me to get into music so early on.
Mm.
And me and my mom were of another thought. We were like, you know, why don't we go? Why don't we try? And let's see where you stand as a vocalist. Because till then I had sung for like inter-school competitions and I'd done fairly well there. And I was like wanting to challenge myself and be like, okay, I've done these state level things.
Mm.
Why not try a national level thing and see where I stand in the country.
Was it a good decision? Like when you look back?
It was a great decision. Even though I didn't make it past top 7, I was in the top 10 finalists. But it was a great decision for me because I learned so much. I was not the singer that I should have been when I was on that show. Like I was undertrained, to be very frank. I don't think I was at the level of the other singers on that show. They were much more experienced. They had sung live before. And this was my first time singing on such a big stage in front of a TV audience. And then obviously almost every household in India is seeing you because Saregama Pa is one of those shows that haan, raat ke 9 baj gaye, TV on ho jate and people see those shows. So for me, it was pretty scary. But I had to go through that to learn how to be a better singer.
Mm.
I think as soon as I got out of that show, I worked so hard. And as soon as that show got over, I knew where exactly I was lacking. And I trained in that department and strengthened myself as a singer.
So here's something I've not told you before, though I've met you once or twice.
You saw me on Saregama.
No, dude. I was like a video game addict as a kid. So and didn't watch much TV. But I'll tell you this, dude. So you were in Jamnabai Narsi.
Mm.
And I have a lot of friends from there.
Yeah.
And I'm not very familiar with the whole Bollywood scene in general.
Okay.
But I remember them telling me about you when I was in engineering college.
Okay.
And these guys said, like, you know, things like, dude, there were people who would pick on you just because you were famous. Or like who bullied you just because you were famous.
Yeah.
And you were one of those dudes who ended up having a lot of girl attention. So probably that became like
a problem,
this, a problem for a lot of dudes. And I was at this party actually where some Jamnabai people were like, I'm going to be straight up, dude. Like, you know how just people generally bitch about someone they know. So that bitching thing was going on about you.
Yeah.
And that got me thinking that, dude, poor kid. Like, you know, he's probably training and doing his own thing. And then he's come back to school and deal with all this shit. So what was that phase of your life? Do you remember that? And do you remember fame coming in as another factor from this side? From the other side, you're getting aggression because people are jealous of you.
I very well remember that. And it's because of that phase of my life that I was almost going to leave singing.
Mm.
The bullying had gotten very bad in school. I was in the 6th or 7th grade, I think, when it started. And I was on this show. I was on national television. My school was very proud of me that I was on representing Bombay and representing them on such a big scale. And there were vote for Arman hoardings all around school. So I was pretty famous. And obviously girl attention happened because when you're famous,
yeah.
It happens. I think it's because, and at that age, I think every guy is just seeking for girl attention. And they were like, okay, why is this guy getting it? I saw that these guys were getting affected with, the fame that I was getting insecure. And somehow there was an atmosphere of jealousy and hatred. And they started doing things to me. They started, putting shit into my bottle, water bottle. Like, okay. And so whenever I used to come back from PT class, I wanted to grab my bottle and drink it and, like, there was all crap in it.
Mm.
Like, they had done some masti with it or whatever. And it's just one of those instances, I think. I can't really remember all of it. It's gone to a very very
deep-seated
part of my head because I've tried to forget about it. But it hurt me so much that I wanted to leave singing. And I expressed that to my mom. And my mom told me that that's the one thing that if you leave, na, then they'll win.
Mm.
That's the one thing that you shouldn't leave. That's the one thing that if you hold and keep it and become who you want to and who you should be and are destined to be, all this will be behind you. You won't even care about this in the future.
I have to ask you a thoda glaring question. Bullying carries itself into adulthood also, dude.
It does.
For a lot of people.
For me, ever since I became successful, I saw all those same people who used to bully me and, you know, trying to be my friends again, trying to be pally with Arman again. Like, hey, what's
long
up?
Long time, bro.
Yeah. You know, all that has happened with me. And I also played along with it. I was not like, you know, ki I'm holding any grudges and all. But I forgive, but I don't forget. I know at the back of my head who has treated me how, and but I don't hold it against anyone. I know I've gone above that. It's no more a part of me, but it dented me in a very big way. In a way where I stopped making friends after that. I stopped interacting with people. I stopped wanting to be a friend of someone because I thought, everyone is going to do this to me. Everyone is going to bully me. Someone or the other is going to do something to me which is negative or which is bad. So better not interact with people only. So I became a recluse kind of a thing, my own thing, music. For 10 years straight, only music, only studies, only music, 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 music. Achieve what I need to because I just need... I concentrated only on singing, took my whole attention off of it. So social life went for a toss because I wasn't really meeting people, wasn't going out. And my job demanded me to be in the recording studio quite a bit. So I missed out on all the parties and the hanging out with people and stuff like that.
Dude, speaking of the recording studio, again, something I've thought about you a lot is that you began like at, I think, age 19, 18, 19 is where you began properly professionally.
As an adult playback singer, yeah.
Dude, and usually for most Indian guys, especially at age 22, you hit this like wall where suddenly there's societal pressure on you to earn money and do something with your life. Correct. Most Indian guys. Mm. Or at least to make a name for yourself. And I remember going through that same phase at 22, and the first 2-3 months of that phase before YouTube and all started were pretty intense because lots of people are telling you shit won't work out, what you're doing is wrong. It happens to all the boys in office also, all the girls also at that age.
Correct.
And then it takes something from inside you to like kind of overcome it and keep working.
Yeah.
I'm telling you straight up, I wouldn't be able to handle all that shit at 18 or 19. So I want to know what you did then, dude. Like as a teenager, you're suddenly thrown in the limelight. You didn't actually go for a college degree, right? Like you.
So I was in first year BMM. And I was doing it not from a place where I want to do BMM or whatever. I was like, that's the only thing that made sense to me at that point in time because I wanted to concentrate on my music. So FI BMM, I was there inside college. I was hanging out as a normal teenager when I was working on my debut album, Arman. Okay, so we need to backtrack a little bit before I went to college. I had got a scholarship to, you know, do a 5-week summer program at Berklee College of Music in Boston. And that's one of the best colleges of music there is ever in the world. And I got honors in that. And I realized that, you know, I want to do English music. I want to do pop music. And that, okay, Bollywood is there, but like, that's not my calling.
Got it.
And as soon as I came back home to Bombay after completing the course, I started making my own songs, starting writing my own lyrics. And my dad saw me doing that and he was like, what are you doing? I was like, dad, I want to create my own album. He's like, are you sure? I don't think India mein album artists, those vibes, I don't think it's going to work because Bollywood is Bollywood. You got to be a Bollywood singer if you want to do anything. I was like, no, dad, this is my dream. I want to do this. My dad sat me down and said, ki, do the Bollywood route, become someone really, really big in India. And then tomorrow, you can think of doing something like this. Which makes sense to me now. But at that age, I'm like, wait, why is my dad telling me to not do something that I'm so passionate about? But India is Bollywood. It was consumed with only film music. So I kind of dropped my dreams of doing a pop album. I did my pop album, but it was in Hindi. I wanted to do an English one. But I did a Hindi pop album with Universal. I signed a deal with them at the age of 17, which was a very big deal. It's a dream label to be signed to when you're a teenager. Justin Bieber signed to Universal in America. So
dude, is that the first step for like a young singer, like to get into that world, that you sign up with a label?
I mean, it is exciting as an artist to be signed to a label. Only to know that in the future you need to be independent. But I think initially it's great to be a label artist. You get to know about the industry. You get to know the inner workings, how a label artist relationship happens, how is music curated. So I worked on my album. I was about to release it in 2013. It got pushed to 2014. My mom told me, being the marketing person she is, that we need a Bollywood name to release this album. Because otherwise, no one is going to listen to albums. Who listens to albums in 2014? I don't think so. Anyone was listening to albums in 2014. And we were thinking of putting it out in the CD format and it'll be available in stores and all. I don't think anyone went out to buy at that point of time. It used to happen in the 90s. Mm. But I still went ahead and did it. But my mom told me, you need someone to launch it. You need a Bollywood personality to launch it. So the only person we could think of who made sense at that point of time was Mr. Salman Khan. So we went and met him. He was in his vanity van. My dad has worked with him for many films, for many Bollywood movies. And he was very hesitant that I go and meet him with this album. He was like, you know, why bother someone else like this and ask, you know, for him to be part of it or whatever. So my mom's like, no, I think it'll be a good step for our son or whatever. So me and my mom, we went competing with our dad. We went to his set. He was shooting an advertisement there, and we waited for quite some time. And then when he came to his vanity van, I gave him my CD and said, "Sir, you know, I've created this album. I would like you to hear it." And in his typical style, he said, "Chalo, let's hear it." So we heard the album and he said, "I like it. It's nice. But I like this song the most." And that song was a song called Love You Till the End. It was the only English song on the album. So I wanted one English song somehow or the other. And he's like, "I want that to be a Hindi song in my Bollywood movie. The next one, which is coming." And I was like, "Sir, that's in my album. I don't know how I can remove it from my album and put it into a movie." He's like, "Don't worry, I want it." So it so happened that one of my songs from my debut non-film album. So I was not thinking of Bollywood at that point of time at all. I was not thinking of doing playback singing, nothing. I was only thinking of releasing my music non-film. That's it. Like independent space. That song went into Jai Ho, which was his movie in 2014. And that's how my debut as an adult playback singer happened at the age of 18.
That's crazy.
And he, in turn, came to my album launch and launched my album. And that kind of gave it a big noise and people heard about it and heard the songs and stuff like that.
Dude, while this is destiny, this is also this thing called power of asking, which is a very underutilized skill.
I think, you know, you got to be... okay, this is what my mom taught me. And even my manager, Ayushman, both are of the thought and both are amazing marketing minds. My mom is key to me. Okay, whoever I have become today is because of her pushing, her telling me, do this, do that. She has always told me, be shameless and ask for it. Max to max, kya hoga? Nahi bolenge na log. Okay, no problem. But at least you have asked. And if that was a yes, that means you've got something. So I think you have to be shameless and you got to ask.
And sometimes 100 no's are worth that one yes you'll get.
For sure. For sure. I think a lot of people, you know, are so scared. I was also very scared. Like, I don't want to ask mom. It doesn't seem good. Like, it doesn't feel good to ask someone for work. Like, no, ask.
Yeah.
What's the harm in asking?
Yeah. Dude, this is also this whole concept of status-driven societies versus wealth-driven societies. India is primarily a status-driven society. Matlab, poochne se, my status will get affected. That's why a lot of people don't ask.
Exactly. Katrate log. Like, poochne se ki, you know, if we ask, we might seem like a lesser of a person or whatever it is. It's not that. You're talented. You have certain things that are going for you. You want a certain thing from that person who you're asking this thing for. And if you don't ask, you won't get.
Yeah, 100%.
And if you never try, you'll never know. Coldplay's biggest line and fix you. So it's as simple as that. I was launched in Bollywood in a big way. Flip side of that is that the movie tanked.
Does that affect your music?
The music also tanked. Music didn't do well at all. wasn't popular, didn't catch on with people. So it was touted as my big debut, Amal's big debut, because he had composed Love You Till The End, that track, which became part of the movie. And both of us for a year and a half were without work after that movie.
Mm.
Because obviously no one wants to work with someone who's had the big debut, but the music didn't catch on.
How many singers fade away like that, dude?
There are many.
Like
many.
Okay.
Many. You don't get too many chances in especially in Bollywood.
Mm. It's a cutthroat industry.
It is very cutthroat. It is, you either you make it or you don't make it. Yeah. I'd hate to say that. I hate to say it. But I think it's, you work a lot, you have to put in that hard work, but that little sprinkle of luck is very important.
Mm.
I believe in that. And you either get that little sprinkle or you don't get it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there has to be some formula. Like, I mean, I was just talking to you outside right now, and you're telling me about what you're thinking about streaming platforms and future businesses.
Yeah, yeah.
And what you've thought of and what your mom has told you. So you have an analytical head. You are some, you're an engineer in your head somewhere.
Yeah, I guess I am. I think I'm a musical mathematician in my brain, thinking what's the next step.
A mathematician in the world of musical business.
Yeah, so exactly.
What did you do in that 1.5 years that helped you break out?
Okay, so for me as a singer, it gave me a lot of recognition. I gained a lot of fans from Jeho.
Mm.
My social media started blowing up. I started getting a lot of followers. I was on Twitter. I had just joined Instagram.
Mm.
So I started getting a lot of traction. People started following me and all. It was very tough for my brother. Because once you debut as a big music composer, and me and my brother's careers are linked in a way. Because for us, we both were just waiting and wanting to get our family up there. Because for a long time, I think we had seen a lot of failure on Dad's end. The success that he should have gotten, he didn't get.
So what has his role been in Amal and your life? And have Amal and you ever had a conversation where you're like, dude, we gotta stick together and do something?
Yeah, so Dad actually had this very open conversation with Amal and me and said, guys, I think my time is done in this industry. I don't think my, my musical career is gonna hold on from here on. And if you guys want to make a name for yourself in this industry, you all got to start working and assisting people.
Assisting as in?
Like learning the job. We didn't know, like, you know what? Learning music is different. And actually being in the music industry and learning how music songs are made and how you sing in the studio is a very different ball game altogether.
Okay.
Like how they say you learn more hands-on and on the job than you can ever learn from universities or courses or whatever it is.
Theory versus practical.
Yeah, always. Mm. When you're doing the job, you learn the most.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Dad pushed Amal to assist composers. And I was anyway singing for a lot of composers. So I had a lot of technical knowledge in the studio and how to sing in the studio. You know? I've done voiceovers, jingles, all of that.
Mm.
Like for almost 200 commercials. So that was a very, very big space for me until the age of 13 or 14 when my voice cracked.
Mm.
And they didn't want any teenage voices. They wanted only kid voices.
Mm-hmm.
From there on, my different journey had begun. So yeah, Dad sat us down and told us that I don't think from here on my career is going to do anything. You guys need to take the responsibility and move this thing forward. And at the age of 15 for Amal and me at 10, to hear that from Dad was like, dude, we got to get shit done.
Hmm.
We got to, you know, pull our socks up and take responsibility. And money wasn't that good in the family at that point of time. Dad was doing 2-3 things here there, like some projects, but we weren't financially strong at that point of time. So Amal started assisting and doing his bit. I started doing recordings, whatever was coming into the house. That's the atmosphere I grew up in. And I think I matured very early because of that. When I started working, when I started earning, when I started seeing what am I spending on.
Because you're surrounded by older people?
No, because I became involved in earning for the family so early on.
Mm.
Like I realized that, okay, if I'm doing these many recordings, this much is coming into the family.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big deal, big responsibility on my shoulders at the age of 11 and 12.
Damn.
And I matured like overnight. I think even today at the age of 25, I don't think I'm mentally 25. I'm much beyond, because I've seen a lot of my parents' journey, my journey, so up close and so early on, which I don't think every kid, like you said, after 22 is when they think like, okay, chalo, abhi kya karna hai? I was, since the age of 10, doing it and living it. So for me, my mental state was very, very different. And we had to get the family on track, which we worked very hard to do. And when this whole Jai Ho thing happened and when the songs didn't do well, Amal was very disillusioned. He was like, you know, the next thing that I do, if it doesn't work, I'm quitting the industry. And I was like, dude, we just started. You can't think like that. He's like, no, I know it. I have to give my best now. And if the next project doesn't click, I don't think I'm going to stay anymore in this. I'll do some business, some side business. And the next project came in the form of Naina. There was a song called Naina from the movie Khoobsurat. And we finished recording the song just 2 days before it released.
Wow.
And in two nights, we created Naina from Khoobsurat and we put that out and we got a fab reaction from fans and everyone, and people loved that song. The movie did well. Amal got that boost that, you know, I think there's still something, you know, there. So at that point of time, both of us are having this journey together, even though he's a composer, I'm a singer, but we were living this dream together. And then he got the chance to do Suraj Duba Hai from Roy, which was, I think, the career-defining, life-defining moment for the Malik family. It wasn't my song. I wasn't the singer of it. Arijit Singh had sung it. But what that song did for our family, I don't think any other song has done that.
Dude, does music work like that as an industry where like one piece of art can...
One song can just change everything for you, man.
Damn. It's... In terms of, you get opportunity saamne se, recognition, numbers.
Everything you get, it's a whole rounded success. It's like it's doing, killing it on the charts. It's, you're getting amazing fans on social media. The traction is amazing. You're getting awarded, you know, you're getting Filmfare awards. You're getting all the big music awards for that. Yeah. It changed everything for us overnight.
This is typically that example of overnight success takes years to build.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you'd asked Amal at the time of Jai Ho, he was at the brink of giving up his career. He was like, no, I don't think I want to do this. He was assisting composers at that point of time. He didn't want to become a composer. He became an accidental composer. And then after that album didn't do well, he's like, maybe this is not what I'm cut out for. But then when that song became so big, Suraj Dubai, I think all of us just as a family were like, we got this. We can do this. And, you know, you just need that one little bit of success and then that energy comes on to everything that follows after that. And from there on, we had 2-3 years of like continuous...
snowballing.
Bangers, like songs coming out left, right, center, killing it on the charts. I started touring. And in 2014 is when I did Jai Ho. 2016, I did my world tour in US and UK. Played Wembley in London, which was a dream venue for any artist. So for me, life changed supersonic in those 2 years. But that whole journey of becoming Arman Malik wasn't just those 2 years, which a lot of people see. I mean, a lot of people just think, ki, haan, Jai Ho mein debut hua, then 2016 mein he went on his world tour and he got these many songs and awards and recognition. But it's this backstory that a lot of people don't know, that it's been a buildup of 10 to 12 years.
Yeah. Dude, so what I like is when we grew up, you know, we looked at people like Sonu Nigam or KK or Udit Narayan, and they become established playback singers in Bollywood and it kind of caps off there.
Correct.
And from the outside, that's the assumption most people make about the music industry, that once you become a good established playback singer,
your shelf life kam ho jate, fir uske baad, then you know it becomes stagnant.
Yeah, but why did you say that, no, I'll be that first Indian guy who like go and create waves abroad also? Is that from that your original dream of Berkeley?
Yes. Okay. So I'll tell you one thing. While all this madness was happening of Bol Do Na Zara, Main Hoon Hero Tera, all my big Bollywood hits. The andar ka Arman was like, wait, I want to still do my pop music. I want to do my English music. I want to do international stuff. I want to, you know, do stuff globally. Write my own songs.
What's the thought behind that?
The thought is you get to be more involved in those kind of songs than you would ever get to be on a Bollywood track. Like, in a Bollywood song, a composer calls you. He's composed a song, a lyric writer sung it, and you just come sing and go.
Vahan you're the creator.
Yeah. And in this scenario, I am getting to create the song. I'm getting to choose what mood I want the song in. What's the video like? What's my image like? What am I being portrayed as? What are the clothes I'm wearing in the video? All of that. And that is exciting for me. I want to become an artist and not just a playback singer. I took this route so that I could become this. What my dad had initially told me that, you know, become a successful artist in India. Become a star in your own country before you try to become a star abroad. So I think it was very sensible of him to drill that into me at that age. But this inside ka real Arman who wanted to come out was waiting, was dormant for some time and then became very active towards 2017. And that's where I got... There was a phase where I came back from a show crying into my room. And I told my mom and dad, like, I cannot do these shows and I cannot sing these songs anymore. I'm tired. Same songs I'm singing night after night, same lyrics. The audience may be liking it because they've heard me for the very first time, but I'm singing it for the nth time and I'm done with this. This is not what's inspiring me. I know these songs have made me Arman Malik, but like, to hell with this. I don't want to do any more shows. And I took a break from everything.
And did what?
Just went traveling. So I wanted to take this trip to do some self-discovery, to kind of understand who I was inside. Because unless you understand who you are, you can't put that out to the world, is what I think. And at that point of time, I was very confused about who I was. Was I a Bollywood singer wanting to do this for the rest of my life, like Sonu Nigam, like Shan, like KK and all these amazing singers? Or was I wanting to become a pop artist, a world global musical icon? And that was my dream. While Bollywood has been such a big part of my career, I am Arman Malik because of that. I would never want to lose that from my identity. Even today, if you see, I'm doing English songs, but on the side, I have my Hindi songs happening. I have my Bollywood film songs happening. But the true artist inside me is craving to be something that he's wanted to do for a very long time. And I wanted to search that. I wanted to search that truth inside of me. And that's why I took that whole break and went traveling. And it gave me a lot of peace, a lot of internal peace. And when I came back, I resumed my Bollywood shows, whatever I was doing. I was happy with it. I guess I just needed that little bit of self, realization, little internal thinking.
Dude, like, how do you break into the American market, or how do you begin that process of becoming an international artist while you're in India?
It's very, very tough, to be honest. I just like any other artist, you would think that, you know, just like how there's Universal Music, Sony Music, Warner Music in US, there are Indian counterparts of them also here. There's Universal Music India, there's Sony Music India, everyone in India. I thought maybe I'll take my English songs and go to the Indian counterparts and be like, you know, hey, this is my English pop songs. Do you think you can speak to your, you know, global partners and be like, hey, we have this guy, Arman Malik in India, who sings and writes in English and he wants to do a global single or album or whatever it is. What do you think of it? I thought that that's what the route was. And I went to quite a few Indian labels, played them my music, but didn't see any headway. They were not sure of how to have that conversation with their with their superiors in US. And then I realized, like, I think maybe I just go to the land where it all happens rather than be here and think that it's going to happen from here.
You went to LA?
I went to LA. But there's a little backstory to that as well. I met a friend in Bombay who was a writer, songwriter. Her name is Natanya. Very dear friend of mine now. She's collaborated on all my stuff up until now. And I met her at Cinemax. And she happened to tell me that, hey, you know, I'm in town for a week. Do you want to catch up and write some songs? And she came over the next week and we wrote a couple of songs. And she told me that, dude, this is not stuff that needs to be hidden in India. This needs to go global. You know, when she heard me sing and write and stuff like that. And that's where she told me, just, you know, why don't you come for a week to LA? Just see how it goes. Write a few songs with some of my writer friends and producer friends there and just see how the process is. I somehow feel like she came into my life probably as a blessing or something, as a catalyst to make something happen. And I believe in that. I believe there are certain individuals that come and be part of your life that help you follow your dreams. And I think she's one of those individuals in my life. And she told me, why don't you come to LA for a week and let's write together with my friends and whatever and see how it goes. It might not lead anywhere. Just come and do something. And I went there, wrote a couple of songs, came back, 6 months, nothing. I was doing my Bollywood shows again, my concerts, my songs here and all. One day I get a call. There's an Indian dude. His name is Ankit, and he has a music label in Sweden, in Stockholm. And he has quite a few friends working in Universal, Sony, abroad. And he happened to hear this demo music that I'd created for a week in LA. And he passed it on to some of these executives in these big labels. And one of them showed interest, and that individual was David Massey. He's the head of Arista Records, which is a very legendary record label in the US and rests under Sony Music. He was going to London for the Brit Awards, and he told me that, hey, why don't you come and meet me there? And he's the guy who launched Jonas Brothers. Mm. He's the guy who signed Shawn Mendes. So it's coming from there. When you hear someone of that stature listening to your music and saying like, hey, this is some amazing stuff, I would love to hear more about you and see where this goes, you kind of get that
it feels right.
It feels right, because see, honestly, you might play your English music to your Indian friends and Indian people, and they might not know or how to react or whatever. They listen to English music of the Western artists and they might not know how to react to it coming from you. But for them, when they hear it and they, and you know, always there's this notion that Indian singers don't get English singing right. Kahin na kahin pronunciation galat hai, ya they come out as wannabe. You know, that was something that I wanted to squash. I didn't want that imagery only for an Indian artist. I know there are so many Indian artists who sing English beautifully, but that notion is there ki yaar, India mein English mat gao, tum log nahi ga sakte ho. I didn't want that to happen, because there are amazing singers in India. And I was like, you know, I want to break that. And if I do this right, now there'll be a lot of singers behind me who'll want to take this journey. And inspired by my journey, they'll have confidence in taking that journey forward, because they are squashing their dreams of singing English to sing Hindi now, because people are telling them ki nahi, you don't sound good singing in English. So I wanted to change things, not only for myself. I didn't want to just chase my dreams. I wanted to change the way people thought in India as well. You know, people never gave that much importance to Western pop or pop music in India. It was only film music happening, or there's completely indie music happening, which there's not a big audience for that. I was like, why isn't there mainstream pop happening? Where is the pop culture? Where are Indian pop stars? There are Punjabi pop stars. But there's no one who is singing in Hindi or in English but is a pop star from India. I didn't see that happening. I was like, this is a gap that needs to be filled, and there needs to be an army of Indian singers out there in the world to do this. And this was my dream. And then I went to meet that that executive in London, and we chatted for a bit, and I inked a deal with Sony Music Global. At the same time, I realized that, you know, a lot of these Indian labels didn't know how to go about it. The same companies, Sony Music and Universal and everyone. But when the whole global thing happened, and when, they realized that, wow, our mother label has signed Arman. And like, this is a big deal. This is India's moment. So sometimes it takes a little bit of a U-turn life. You know, they might not see the dream as you present it to them. But when they see the whole picture, now I have the most beautiful working relationship with the Sony Music India team here in India, which they actually, at that point in time when I played them my music initially, they didn't understand the vision of what was happening.
Mm.
Because it's never happened in India before. Mm. There is no one who has tried to break out globally.
Yeah.
And there is, because there's no precedent, people are scared ki hum kya kare, what do we do, what is the route to take?
Mm.
Because there's no case study.
Mm.
There's no one who's done this before that we can learn from and kind of work that into action.
What were your fuck-ups like in that journey? Like from India to the West?
I think it was learning. There was no fuck-ups.
Like not doing it earlier?
No, I think it was a perfect timing. Mm-hmm. I think it was the absolute perfect timing to have made this switch over. And, Hindi music, English music, all kinds of music was having its moment in India. Listeners were exploding.
Mm.
Streaming platforms were coming into India in a big way. Consumers, listeners were getting so many variety of genres to listen to. People listening to so many different artists. I thought this is the perfect time to kind of do something internationally, because global giants like Spotify have now come to India and set up shop.
Mm.
Amazon Music happened. So if they are coming here, that means they have sensed a certain business opportunity here, right? Mm. There's a market here.
Mm.
There's something that can be made out of India. There's something here.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, these shifts are happening. India is being looked at as one of the most important markets in the world today, not only probably other fields, but from I know only my musical field, so I know from a musical and entertainment field, it's becoming a hub.
Mm.
Just by the sheer numbers we have here, the kind of people who consume, the number of people that consume our music here. So I was like, this is the perfect time for anyone to do this shift. And then this whole Control happened, my first single. And I got featured at Times Square on the Billboard, the Spotify Billboard. And that was just unreal. For my first single to have that kind of a look, it was fabulous.
That's that Berkeley kid's dream, man.
Yeah, man. It's like, you know, when that song released, when Control released and it was available on all these platforms, I was jumping like a kid.
Mm.
And I've had 250 plus songs released in different languages, and I never felt that excitement. Like I felt like this is my first song ever.
Yeah,
I have felt that energy, that excitement, that childish happiness, and I think it somehow was the realization of my childhood dreams, my teenage dreams that came true. Mm-hmm. And if you really manifest it and you really want it to happen, it does happen. Thoda late hua, lekin I think great hua.
crazy, bro. Kind of unrelated to music,
yep.
But I have this one burning question. What can the Indian professional space learn from the Western professional space? Like, what were your differences? Is it Jugaad also, in some ways?
No, I think they're very collaborative.
Mm.
We aren't very collaborative here. We're learning to be.
Mm.
But inherently, I think we always have this notion or that thought ki,
why is he going ahead of me?
And wo apna kar raha, usko apna karne to hum apna karenge.
Hmm.
Never like, what if me and him do something together, or me or her do something together, and hum jo ek saath karenge, that will do really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And that will benefit both of us.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thinking is not there here. Which is now happening, obviously. You're doing collabs with other creators.
Mm. It's the same thing about status-driven society versus wealth-driven society. That's been the theme of my life lately.
It's crazy. I mean, it's for me, when I started working in the West with these producers and writers, I had a lot of unlearning to do.
Mm.
You know, there was these years of Indian learning that I had.
Like what? Like, can you talk about?
Like probably being in charge of everything, you know? Like, main ye bhi karunga, wo bhi karunga, ye bhi karunga. There, it's more like, okay, we're going to do this. Okay, this line is coming from this dude. That person is doing the guitar part or whatever. Everyone's putting their ideas in. Here, it's like composers composing, lyric writers writing his lyrics. I'm coming, doing my singing, and that's it. Everyone's slotted.
Hmm.
There, it is like, whoever comes up with the best idea, we want that.
Wow.
Even if a guy who's like just scribbling on his notepad and comes up with one word which becomes the hook of the song, that's a genius idea coming from someone. Mm. And everyone welcomes different ideas from different individuals there in that one room. I think it's a great synergy.
Yeah. Like, again, it's like for the overall good, they focus on like your end product and not like...
Exactly. They focus on getting the song in the best possible manner, be it whoever gives the idea.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be like, oh, maine hi kiya ye gana. Like, I've done it.
Do you think like too many egos are massaged in the creative industry and that's why the end product kind of takes a hit? Because that's what I feel in our space for sure.
Yeah, there's too much ego in the Indian, in the Indian space, in the Indian industry. Everyone wants like things for themselves.
Mm.
Be like, okay, I want this success for me. It should not go to them.
Mm.
It's not about what if we get shared success?
Mm.
That's never the scenario. That's never the thought process. Everyone's like, me.
Mm.
Why is that guy going ahead? What is he doing?
Mm-hmm.
So always in that lens. And never has it been about collaboration. And never has it been about like, hey, why don't we all create something amazing together? Yeah.
Dude, which is also the other aspect of this conversation I want to bring in, your whole luck factor, destiny, this shit that's larger than the human experience.
Yeah.
I feel that once you have that energy of being collaborative, stuff starts working out.
Yeah.
When you actually have a intention 100%. Of giving, intention of, okay, bro, all of us will like go ahead. Shit works out, shit grows. But this is something you only experience after you and actually switch your own mindset.
Also, a lot of people have this fake... notion that agar hum kuch achha karenge to hume achha milega. It's never like, oh, if you force yourself to do something that you don't want to do, you will get good.
Mm.
That's never the case. You have to actually be naturally
wanting
to give something or wanting to be collaborative.
Yeah.
If that energy, universe is very smart. It recognizes what's true energy, what's fake energy.
Yeah.
If you're trying to do good and not actually do good when you want and you mean to do good, it can be easily differentiated. You won't be like, oh, I have to do this so I'll get good from it.
Mm. You're one of the few guys I've met in my life in our industry who talks so openly about like the universe and numerology and things.
I'm a big believer in cosmic energies. I am a big believer that anything you do has, there is a cosmic conspiracy happening to, this is magical, whatever is happening right now. Me and you sharing thoughts, me and you speaking, about our journeys, about our thoughts. I think it's beautiful. And we take this for granted. We take these small little moments for granted. I think the universe is present in all these small little moments. And for me, I've always looked out for these signs from the universe. Be it in the form of numbers. I'm a big 11-11 believer. Yeah. COVID fist bump.
Yeah, COVID. I was like, I need to do a fist bump on this,
oh,
man.
Oh, God.
But 1-11, 11-11.
Is sanitizer? Yeah. Sorry.
One, it's okay, man. The 1-11 and the 11-11 is going to take care of it.
For sure.
The fist bump was meant to happen.
So I'm a big believer in those, even though like I'm not scientifically in on that.
Hold on. Explain what 111111 is to the listener. Like, I know what you're talking about, but there needs to be a little backstory.
So, I mean, each number represents something different. I don't know it at the back of my head. I always search, what does this number mean when I see it? But I think the premise around this whole number thing, 11-11 or 111, is that the universe is trying to grab your attention to something that's happening in your life and telling you that probably this is something good or this is something bad. You need to change this, or you need to realign, or you need to be ready because there's abundance coming to you, or there's amazing things lying ahead for you. There's a big change for you.
Yeah.
So I think these symbols, numbers.
I just want to give one perspective. This is basically like when you look at the clock and it's always 111 or 1111.
Not only the clock. Sometimes I'm randomly just driving and I see the car in front of me and it's 333 or it's 222 or whatever. And I'm like, why are these signs coming to me?
And it's not a one-off. It'll be like that whole week you'll see a 222 or a 333.
It could be random, Eric. I could see all of them in 1 week. And I try my best to decipher what pattern is happening and whatever. But that's me. I'm crazy. But the basic essence of it is that the universe is trying to tell you something. It's trying to bring your attention to something happening in your life. It's trying to realign something in your life or is trying to keep you prepared for what's going to happen.
Mm.
So that's what I feed off of that that energy. I didn't believe in it. A friend of mine kind of like brought my attention to it. and after I started paying attention to it for the first few times, then it became...
You started noticing patterns.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It just happened to me. It's not like, oh, I was looking out ki 11:10, oh, I have to wait for 11:11.
Yeah.
It's not that. It's just randomly, I just look at my phone and it's 11:11 or 2:22, whatever.
Like, I talk to a lot of people about these conversations with questions instead of just Googling that what does this mean. Like, that's been my place where I get answers. So I'll give you one perspective on like something I found out. So the perspective is basically from the world of astrology. I think I've had this conversation with you, but it's okay, we'll do it once again for the podcast.
Let's do it.
So when people think of astrology, when you say the word astrology, you automatically think of the Gregorian calendar and Gemini, Aries, Virgo, whatever.
Correct.
Okay, but astrology as a concept is really, 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 really old in the history of the world.
Mm.
And early on, there used to be some civilizations which were established and some weren't. So there was like tribes in some countries and there was like proper established cities in some countries.
Okay.
India was established, parts of Africa were established, Egypt was established, South America was established, and I think some part of Southeast Asia was established. And all these places, this is like 50,000 BC.
Okay.
Before even like modern, like, so the writings that we have now, which we have deciphered, I think it's only up to the Indus Valley civilization, Mesopotamia.
Yeah.
That's why we think that those
Harappa
are the oldest.
And all that stuff. Yeah.
But it's actually way older. Those civilizations considered themselves as modern and they thought there was some prehistoric
thing. Okay.
So astrology as a concept comes from that prehistoric thing.
Okay, okay.
And all of them have the same logic. Egyptian astrology, South American astrology. And
what
Indian.
Is that logic?
Yes, the logic is like what we call Kundali and all today. Like as in, you know, have you seen those birth charts?
Yeah,
the astrology charts. So are you familiar with like how it works? Like,
I don't know.
Okay, so we'll do that on the podcast.
Okay.
Suppose you're born in this room.
Hmm.
They'll map out the sky in a certain way, like as in they'll figure out, okay,
they take a certain image of the of how this how the sky looks at the time you were born.
Yeah.
And that shape somehow denotes your astrological sign and stuff.
So basically, they'll take a map of the sky and the map of the sky is divided into 12 houses.
Hmm.
And each of those houses represent one aspect of you as a person.
Oh.
Or when you're born. So one will be your personality, one will be your mother, one will be your father, one will be your something about your marriage, your career, your finances, your death, your friendships and partnerships.
Okay.
So they basically represent different aspects of you. Now, that is a map of the sky.
Mm.
And our solar system has celestial bodies.
Yeah.
So the 9 planets plus the moon and the sun.
Yeah.
They're the celestial bodies that have the maximum impact on the Earth. Now, any object like this pillow, you, the light, the mic, all of it has its natural frequency. But you can also see it. Like it's got its own body and it's always giving out a frequency. The bigger an object is, the more powerful the frequency it gives out. So a planet, a moon, the sun is so massive that it's giving out a very powerful electromagnetic energy as well as more subtle energies which are yet to be discovered by science.
Oh.
And that's the basic logic of astrology where they say that, okay, how do planets actually affect your life, your future?
Achcha.
As your life progresses, the position of those planets changes in your horoscope. But you're born with a certain
position of all those planets at that point of time.
Which predetermines, okay, this is his likely personality. This is her likely money. You know?
Understood.
But it can all change. So the world of yoga says that if you practice yoga, if you're a good person, if you're spiritual, if you meditate, all this becomes null and void eventually. Like, and then it's just about your hard work and your dedication.
Okay.
And if you keep meditating, it becomes cleaner. So all those civilizations spoke about astrology as this concept.
Hmm.
Unfortunately or fortunately, of all those civilizations, India was the only one that kind of retained its old teachings.
Okay.
So when, you know, even before European imperialism happened, before the British came and took over India, there was a lot of Europeans who visited India because of the Silk Route and all. And they understood that, oh, dude, these guys have this astrology system, which they really believe in and which they thought was accurate.
Yeah.
But they didn't exactly understand what it was. And they carried it back to Europe and developed modern astrology, what we know, which is that they'll divide all people into, how many signs are there? 12?
But that's not very accurate.
It's a very general, it's not accurate also. It's like a very, you're bracketing.
It's an overview.
Yeah, it's an overview.
It's not like like how sun, moon, rising and all that stuff. That's
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah. So it's like if you and me, if I'm born on June 1st, you're on June 2nd, they'll think Arman and Ranveer are roughly the same people.
Yeah.
But even that June 1st to 2nd, there's been a lot of
shifts. There's been a lot of shifts.
In the cosmic world. But any of these things are beyond science, man. And it's also some of those things where you only...
But I love all this. Yeah, I'm a big a geek when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Because, I mean, dude, I think you've had some experiences in your life. And it's all the experiences that finally determine what you think.
But I think only people who make themselves more...
Open
to accepting things from the universe are the only ones who are given this vision. Yeah, I believe.
I agree.
I believe. You know, there are a lot of people who are closed to this chapter of whatever.
Existence.
They don't believe that there's a cosmic power or there's some kind of energy. There's some above human energy that is happening, that is working its magic in the world today. Or doom, whatever it is. whatever is happening is because of this. I mean, it's not... I believe that whatever you do, you do.
Mm.
But there is always this certain power that's around you that is... I wouldn't want to say control. It is kind of letting things function the way they're doing. It's kind of veering things in the direction that it goes in.
Yeah.
So there is this entity. I don't know what it is. Even 100%. I cannot say what it is. I only don't know. But as long as you keep yourself open to it, that energy exposes itself to you.
Yeah.
And you receive more and more knowledge about it. And honestly, if someone gains more knowledge about it, they won't even be able to explain. I cannot explain what knowledge I have learned from the universe because it's more deep set. It's not something like, oh, this, that. It's not clear. It's very,
spread out.
Under the breath or like it's said... Probably it's ambiguous.
Esoteric is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm very bad at my English. I don't get these cool ass words.
that's the word for what you said.
Like, okay, so basically it's esoteric, guys. It's not expressed as it is. Mm-hmm. It's something that you can only feel and understand and it's inside your system.
Yeah.
So I think I won't be able to share what I've learned from the universe for myself. But I think it's a very powerful it's a very powerful energy if people know, are open to harnessing it and open to accept it.
The guys who are deep into like astrology believe that the 111, 222, 333 are your first house indicator, your second house indicator, your third house indicator.
Okay.
So for example, your second house is the
222.
The lady in your life, which could be your mom or your wife.
Understood.
Where she needs your attention or, you know, you are doing something
which is wrong or whatever.
Similarly, then money is like one of them. I think creativity is 4 or something like that.
Okay.
Where you need to, I think creativity is 3.
3.
You need to go and like give your creative work process.
Okay.
And 111 or 1111 is usually stability.
Hmm.
It's like you are doing, you're on the path.
You're on the correct path.
Yeah. You're doing exactly what you're meant to do in life. Which also brings me to my next question, which is that, dude, in your whole like career journey, can you give us like instances where shit has just happened to you? Where you're like, okay, dude, this wasn't me. This wasn't my mehnat. Because people assume that hard work directly results in success. But there's actually a lot of other shit that happens when it comes to success, which you only realize 3-4 years after experiencing success.
Yeah.
Even in your first year, you'll still think, no, it's just by chance,
Correct.
And then the by chances happen way too much.
Yeah. So, it's happened with me a lot of instances. I'll give you one instance very early on. The Filmfare Awards. As you know, it's one of the most prestigious awards in our country. And once you have a Filmfare Award, that means you have arrived. My family, like at least my family, us four, like my dad had never won a Filmfare Award or even been nominated or even invited to a Filmfare ceremony. So for me and Amal to be invited, to be nominated was a very big deal. So I wasn't nominated. I had sung, you know the song, Main Hu Hero Tera, right? So that song I'd sung and I thought it would be nominated, but it wasn't nominated. So I was not nominated in the best playback singer category. And I just went there to cheer Amal because he was he was nominated for the for that Roy album in which Suraj Dubai was there. And I was like pretty sure Amal is going on stage and going to win the award. And I was going to root for him. And I was like, first Filmfare, let's dress all, you know, dapper and all that. So Amal's award happens. He wins it. He comes back. We all are super emotional. Then there is this this award that gets announced, which has no nominees. They just announce the winner. And I was getting ready to just bounce because we were like, we're done with Amal's award. And like, you know, all of us just need to go back home and party. And that gets announced. Arman Malik wins R.D. Barman Award for New Rising Music Talent in, you know, for Main Hu Hero Tera. And I was like, wait, what just happened? I did not expect this. And I was not in a mind frame to get it. And sometimes when you're not in that zone, and when life surprises you, when you get things that you don't even expect, and at the age of 20, winning that award, I was the youngest male playback singer to win the Filmfare Award. And that even happened without me getting nominated for it. It just was a surprise award, which got announced. I think these are the moments that make me believe, like, I think there's someone looking out, someone who's making things happen and making you believe that, you know, hey, this is all, you know,
possible.
This is possible for you. That's some magical shit that happens to you sometimes.
What's the, again, this is like one of those criticized words on the internet, just because there isn't a good enough word for it. But speaking about spirituality,
I want to know what's the definition of, what do you call spirituality? Because I also want to understand.
There's two paths, right? Like, one path is the path you just described in this whole conversation, which is your professional path.
Correct.
And there is a second path, that's your other purpose in life. Like,
what have you come on earth to do?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what's Arman come on this earth to do versus what is that soul which is now occupying the body of Arman? Why has that come back?
Okay.
So that's the basis of it.
Spirituality means that this is an old soul that's come into Arman.
It's a parallel path to the one you're already existing on. So whenever you have that 111, 222 that you see around you, that's actually the other body getting activated.
Where's that other body?
Inside you.
Acha.
So it's again, the world of spirituality is like really broad, but the basic definition of it is like, focus on your karma game, be a good person, work really hard, like with whatever work you're doing, stay honest.
Correct.
And the process of meditation and self-discovery, like how you went to New Zealand to like discover yourself.
Yeah.
That can happen when a person does like a lot of deep meditations daily also, because that's effectively what you're doing. What is meditation? You're pulling your focus away from the real world just into your breath or just into that one thing you're thinking.
Yeah, correct.
So you're completely able, the goal is to forget your identity, forget that you're a singer, forget that you're a man, and you just come back to that one.
Make yourself shunya, basically.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's this guy called Naval Ravikant, okay, who's this philosopher from US. He's a big entrepreneur.
Okay.
He says that meditation is like intermittent fasting for your brain. Because intermittent fasting for your body is, you starve your body, it heals. Same logic with meditation. When you're that quiet and that focused, your brain heals.
Wow.
So again, all this like forward your spirituality, but it's a broad definition. Now I'll ask you, dude, what's your like outlook on it?
So I've always been the kind of person that I feel that, you know, apart from my singing and apart from my musical career, I've come here to do good. I feel like that's one calling of mine. I feel like I've come on this planet, one side music, obviously, but also to share what I have learned or what I know. I feel at the age of 25, I know a lot. I mean, not bragging about it.
No, but you have a 15-year career by now.
Yeah.
So,
but at the age of 25, I've learned a lot. I know a lot, which I feel I can share with younger musicians who are now
beginning
and probably disillusioned about what they want to do or how they want to go about it, or bring a certain structure to them and say that this is if you do this, this will happen. And I've done it and I know it will happen. So I feel like I have that side to me.
I got to ask you how.
I don't know if that is spirituality.
It is.
Okay. Which is why I asked you to define it, because I don't know what it is, but I definitely do strongly feel that there is this side of me that wants to really help people and guide people. Baba AM. I go by that hashtag Baba AM whenever I write any quotes and inspire people and stuff like that. So I'll have my own brand of Patanjali and stuff happening.
I have to ask you a hard question.
Yeah.
About just like modern day singers or like musical talent.
Yeah.
Very simple question. How do you guys earn money? Like, what is the actual process of money going from your audience's pocket / your label's pocket to your pocket? Like, how? What are the different ways in which you'll earn money?
So singers in India earn money through live shows. Live concerts.
Their main money comes from there.
Their main money. Oh, okay. My main income comes from live shows. We would love if we would earn money from the sales of songs, but we don't.
That happens in the West.
It happens in the West. We don't here because there's no structure here yet. Now it has come. It's finally coming into shape.
Like how?
There are rights societies now that are they were there for a long time, but they were corrupt for quite some time, and now they're cleaned up and they're now giving royalties, giving revenues to the creators of the songs. But it's not in the ideal way that it should be. Even in the West, there are loopholes, actually. There are certain loopholes even in their system where certain creators don't get compensated enough for their work. Here to hai nahi. Matlab, India is like very, very, very behind when it comes to being fair to creators.
But in 10 years, it'll be different?
It will be different. It will definitely be different. And I can see the change happening right now in front of me. Lot of creators are owning their own songs, owning their own masters. So when the song releases or when it's streamed on any of these sites, that money, having shared money with the distributing partners. Like if, example, if 100 rupees is made from one stream, this is not the real figure, I'm just hypothetically saying. Like if one stream of a song brings 100 rupees, to usme se jo bhi percentages you have to distribute to the guy who has helped you distribute that song to those different stores or their streaming platforms, he'll take his percentages and other percentages. The streaming site will take its own percentages and then probably cut down and you'll get 40 rupees out of 100. That 40 usually comes to the label unless you own your own song. Usually goes to the label. But it depends on how you structure your business. We've all been label artists. For me, until now, I don't think all the songs that I have sung, I could have earned anything because I've not created those songs. I'm not a composer on those songs, and neither am I a writer on those songs. I'm just a singer and a vocalist and a performer. But on my English songs, I am a contributor towards this. Like I told you, right? I am part of the song making process. So I'm part of the song creation. So I am a writer. And wahan pe writer means person who writes the song, as in the lyrics, and the person who makes the tune for it. So both of them are called writers. Yahan pe there's a distinction that
lyricist.
Person who makes the tune is the composer. The person who writes the words, the lyricist. There it's like anyone in the room who gives a good line is a writer.
Got it.
So that's how it is. And in Bollywood, I've just sung. So I'm just a singer. So I'm not entitled to those royalties that a creator should get. But I'm not a creator of the song. But there are royalties that as a singer you get for having performed a song, which are called performance royalties, which a few societies outside of India give. Even in India, there are royalty societies that have come up now. So the scene is changing. It's becoming better for creators, for artists, and who want to earn money from their songs. So primarily right now, we earn only from live shows. Obviously, for the next 1.5 year, I don't see any live shows happening, given to the scenario right now. So the popular belief is that as singers, we get paid to sing a song. And that's not true. Do you know that? Or
no, I'm assuming it's like, so you sign a song, you get like money. And then
we don't get. In Bollywood. I mean, I've sung songs in the South Indian industries and in other industries outside of Bollywood. But I don't think any singer has gotten paid to sing a song. Be it Arijit Singh, be it me, be it whoever. As far as I'm aware, I don't think we get paid to sing a song. It's understood that if the song goes in your voice and the song becomes famous, you learn from the shows.
Wow.
You understand?
But it wasn't the case earlier, right?
Like, I don't think so. It wasn't. It was... So, you know how I would like to change the industry, it would be like, okay, if I've come into the studio, it's a service rendered. And I need my remuneration for my service rendered.
Mm.
That's how I look at it. Mm. I have a very practical way of looking at it. But here, I think they're just not very sure of who they want.
So they test different singers. So
they test different singers, obviously.
Mm.
Which is okay. Obviously, you want to know who would fit the song best. But I have come there. 2 hours of my time have gone there. So that is my time gone, my effort gone. So I think I should be compensated for that. Which any singer wants to be compensated. But obviously, that's not the norm in the industry.
Who decides these rules?
You won't even, like, if you ask, it came to a point where it, sometimes if you ask for money, it becomes like, dude, bahut attitude aa gaya singer.
Wow.
It's like, arre, wo gaane se pehle hi paise ke baare mein baat kar raha hai. He's talking about money just before even like singing the song. He's not even thankful that we have called him to sing the song.
But who calls Arman? Like, is it a composer? Is it a producer? Is it?
So sometimes it is. Sometimes it's producers. Mostly it's composers. And usually the money doesn't come out of the composer's budget or whatever. I think it comes from the production house, and they just don't have remuneration for singers. But you know, I'm slowly wanting to change that, and I hope it changes. But you can't really change it. It's like an unspeakable thing.
Got it.
You can't go into the studio and say like, hey, listen, this is my bill for the you know, for what I did, and where can I send the invoice?
Wow, dude.
That's not there. That's not even part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You have to just sing the song and just pray that the song comes out in your voice, so that when that song becomes famous, you do shows and then you earn money.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it is. That's how crazy it is.
Arman Malik, thank you for being on the Ranveer Show, brother.
Cheers, bro.
That was a nice COVID fist bump. Guys, I'm going to be linking all of Arman's handles down below. Make sure you go check it out. And Arman, any last short message for the world?
Just chill, man. Just chill out. All of us are in the same boat. All of us are going through the same shit. There's no point stressing. Just take your kambal, put on Netflix or Amazon Prime, whatever works for you, and just chill out. Have your favorite food, burger, fries, whatever, and just chill. Let's relax. Let's get over with 2020. Aage dekha jayega.
Beautiful. Thank you, brother.
Cheers.